Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
What happens when true crime truly becomes too disturbing for reality? And then we travel to a backyard barbecue to hang out with our friends while eating a couple of juicy burgers. But little do we know that this barbecue is about to be interrupted by a creature from the beyond. Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. Hope you guys are having a great day too. Hope you guys had an amazing time recently. We got a ton of stuff to cover, so we're going to get started right away. First off, running into Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Everyone get on your feet and give it up for our newest Patreon supporter, Jared. Woohoo! Yeah, wee! Yeah, he's all running on in. Running on into Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Jared, you're going to be our captain, our pilot this episode. If you guys can't support the show financially through the Patreon or through YouTube memberships or anything like that, the merch store, that's totally fine. It really, really is. Just help spread the word about Dead Rabbit Radio. That helps out so much. Tell your friends, tell your family, tell everyone you know. Dead Rabbit Radio is your favorite paranormal show. Let's get this party started, Jared. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the keys to the Jason Jalopy. We are leaving behind Dead Rabbit Radio Command. Drive us all the way out to Seaside, Oregon. First off, I'm sure you guys can tell I'm feeling a lot better now if you listened to my last episode. What was it called? Like the Mucus Man attacks. I found out that I was not... I think I said in that episode I had post-nasal drip. No, I actually had strep throat. I was in a lot of pain when I recorded that. And, you know, I can record episodes when I'm not feeling good, but I was in a lot of pain just talking. And luckily, I talked to my doctor and I got antibiotics, and it's definitely cleared up now because I needed to feel better for Seaside, Oregon. You know, I had a presentation to do, and it was Thursday. I was still feeling really sick. I would have went anyways, and I would have tried to do the presentation, but it would have been very painful. But thank you so much. I got all your emails, and I saw your YouTube comments and Discord comments and everything, wishing me good health. Really, really appreciate it. You guys are such a good group of friends, of listeners. I really, really appreciate that. But definitely, I'm feeling a lot better now. The antibiotics have truly kicked strep throat down. I'm so glad. Thank you for your well wishes. Really, really appreciate it. Those things always do help. And I buckled down, took my medicine. We went to Seaside, Oregon. And let me give you a quick little overview of that. We're going to be talking about it over the next couple weeks, honestly, little bits here and there. A lot of you guys came out to visit me, so you guys are going to be getting your shout outs. All of that stuff. I didn't want to talk about one thing in particular, though. I thought this was super interesting. So this time I had a vendor booth. I didn't have that last year. I got stickers to give out and business cards and flyers and stuff like that. But I go, you know, I got to have something else, right? Because it's a big table and I don't have that much stuff to give out. When I did the UFO festival, the McMiniman's UFO festival, a couple years ago at this point, I set up a haunted museum. It was on a table. It was on like a 4x8 table or whatever, next to someone selling candy corn and someone else selling balloons. But I had a couple items that I'd gathered through my years that I call it the Museum of the Macabre. It didn't go over well at the UFO festival. People were like, oh, what? I'm here to buy candy corn. Why is this guy talking about haunted dolls? I mean, I figured I'd try it again at Seaside, Oregon. So I brought a couple items. One of them I brought, I've done episodes pretty much on all of these. I brought that block of wood sculpture that I believe could be a blessed item. I don't think I'll bring that back because it was hard to explain. It's hard to explain. People are kind of just milling past your booth. I'm like, step right up, be cured of all your ailments. What? You got cancer, good sir? touch this and you'll be cured. Obviously, I didn't say anything like that, but I brought that. I brought Veronica, the haunted doll, as well. And we've talked about Veronica in the past. If you haven't heard that episode, basically, I did an episode on haunted dolls a couple of years ago. I bought Veronica, who I'm holding in my hands right now. That's her squeaking. And we found out this doll's from the 1950s. We were looking it up, but I bought this doll on eBay. When I bought it, it said that it's haunted. Bought it for about like $25-$30. And what it would mean is that at late at night, you could hear the sound of a woman's voice, and there were phantom smells, perfume smells also associated with it. And I bought this doll a couple years ago. It's been in my house. Now it's one of the background items during my YouTube shorts, my true crime TikToks. It's just sitting up there on the mantle. And I brought that with me as well. Now, I went with my friend Sabine, and she has made it very clear the whole idea of a haunted museum she does not like. Because she goes, I don't think any of these items have any power whatsoever, and I don't want to be asked about it. I don't want people going, hey, is this doll really haunted, and putting her on the spot. And I go, no, trust me, this will go over really, really well. We'll just say they're allegedly haunted, because I don't know, maybe they are. Maybe, right? So anyways, I thought this was really interesting. We brought Veronica the Haunted Doll to the Oregon Ghost Conference, where you have a lot of psychics. You have a lot of psychics, a lot of mediums are there as well. Even though it's a ghost conference, it really encompasses all paranormal phenomenon. We even had James Clarkson, who is a nationally known UFO researcher. He came and gave a presentation on UFOs. It's really, really cool. There's a whole section called Psychic Row, where there's psychics and palm readers and tarot readers where you can have those services performed. So bringing a haunted doll to the conference, Sabine was like, everyone's going to know it's fake. And I go, well, I'm not putting money on it. I'll say it's allegedly haunted, and I'll tell them the story. I'm not claiming it's haunted, but when I bought it, they said it was haunted. So anyways, I put this out there. On the table, I had the blessed object, the block of wood, which most people thought was a curious item. But Veronica the Haunted Doll was sitting there. And on three separate occasions, and each time it was pretty much the same thing. This woman would come up, we'd start talking, and she'd go, what's this? Is this a haunted doll? I had a little, like, pieces of paper out describing. I go, yeah, allegedly haunted. And I tell him what I told you, sounds. The sound of a woman's voice at night, smells, and sometimes they'd pick it up, sometimes they'd touch it. But I'd tell them the story, and they would say, it's not haunted. I'm getting no energy from it whatsoever. And I go, that's probably true. I go, I've never experienced anything with Veronica. I go, it's just kind of a cool doll to have in my collection. I thought it was interesting. So we really now have a bit of confirmation. We have three different people who were mediums or psychics, had the ability to detect if Veronica is actually haunted, and three different people at three different times, hours apart, came up to me, was talking to me, and when they looked at the doll, when they touched the doll, they said, she is not haunted. This doll has no energy to it. So that was kind of cool, right? I like Veronica the doll. She's obviously going to be part of our collection. She is creepy. People find her upsetting to look at, so of course, you know I gotta have her hanging out in the background of my videos. But I thought that was really cool. It would have been cooler if they all confirmed it was haunted. Yeah, sure. But that's part of paranormal research. You're going to get people who go, no, that's people in the know. Obviously, a skeptic can be like, that's not haunted. Nothing's haunted. Ghosts don't exist. And I'm like, whatever, bro. But to have people who actually believe in the phenomenon and believe dolls can be haunted and believe that they can read the energy, and all three of them said, this doll's not haunted. Okay, that's fair. That's probably a fair read on the whole thing. What was interesting, too, was I brought a true crime book that's considered one of the worst true crime stories ever written. It's called Final Confession. It's the autobiography of a serial killer. And as far as I know, it's the only autobiography written by a serial killer. He wrote it with help of this other researcher, but Donald Pee-wee Gaskins told his story. And it's the guy who helped him write it, the co-author, developed really bad cancer, as opposed to mildly good cancer, developed cancer from it, and he believes the reason why he got the cancer was being so close to such an evil man for so long. There's no doubt in his mind he got it from working with Donald Pee-wee Gaskins. Donald Pee-wee Gaskins is considered the worst serial killer in American history. He tortured people. His whole shtick was this. He would try to get two people, usually relatives or friends, and then torture them in front of each other. Just like Dean Corll, who is another serial killer who's so horrible, they don't make Lifetime movies or Netflix documentaries about these guys because their crimes are so repugnant. He would torture and kill family members in front of each other in incredibly brutal ways. So I brought that book, Pee-wee Gaskins' Horrific Stuff. What's interesting, too, is the fourth item I brought was The Showstopper. This one, actually, I got it. I grabbed it at the very last moment, like the day before when I was packing up. I said, where is that? I got to bring that out. And it stopped people in their tracks. So many people stopped to talk to me about this item that at 100%, I think the block of wood, the carved wood art piece won't be coming back. It just takes too long to talk about. I brought my copy of Stephen Lightfoot's seminal publication, Stephen King Shot John Lennon. And people were just floored by this. People were laughing. They're like, I've never heard of this before. And just looking at it and being able to hold it. I said, you guys can order one of these yourself. They're like 10 bucks. People are writing down the web address, LennonMurderTruth.com. That one would constantly stop people. They'd walk by, they'd chuckle. And then they'd be like, what is this? What? And I was like, oh man, you got a couple minutes? I'll totally go into this for you. And it was a hoot. Stephen King Shot John Lennon was definitely the standout thing because you don't see stuff like that anymore, especially in the digital age. You don't see a black and white zine published back in 1995 and looking through it. And so that was great. I had a really good time. That was our little museum we had set up. I thought that was cool about the Veronica, the doll's experience with all of these other psychics coming through. But it was Stephen King Shot John Lennon was the standout. So I'm wondering, I wish Hans Wurmhat had some merch, because I was thinking, I want to make, you know how they have those signs that say, in this house, we believe, no human is illegal, love is love, what are the other ones, climate change is real, whatever, all that stuff. I want to make one of those signs that says, in this house, we believe, Stephen King shot John Lennon, monkeys don't exist, Bigfoot is Mormon. I think that'd be great. The color orange is evil. So get ready for that merch. Get ready for that merch to come out. I think something like that would be fantastic because it's just conversation starters, right? Anyways, we got more stories to talk about with the Oregon Ghost Conference in the coming episodes, but I wanted to give you guys a quick overview. I had a blast. It's always a pleasure to meet you guys in person. Presentation went over really well. A lot of fun. Jared, let's go ahead, though. That was kind of like the preamble. Jared, let's get started with the actual episode. I'm going to go ahead and toss you the hair hang glider. Let's climb to the top of the tallest building in Seaside, Oregon, which you always know because it's a tsunami zone. There's tsunami exit signs everywhere. They're like, if there is a tsunami, run this way. And you're like, Jason, wouldn't it just be the opposite direction of the beach? Well, because the threat of a tsunami is so great, because it's in that Cascadia subduction zone, if there's the earthquake that they believe is going to happen there, it's not just running away from the tsunami, it's running away from the tsunami and running up the mountain. So painted on this, you can't really enjoy your time there because you're constantly running into signs that say, tsunami evacuation zone. You not only have to run out of the city, you have to run up this nearby mountain. There's like an elementary school on the mountain. They said this is where you'll go to not die during the tsunami. So you're all running. The kids are like having a good time at the playground. They're playing Foursquare and stuff like that. And all of a sudden they see 10,000 people running towards them. They're like, ah! Yeah, you do it on foot because the traffic would just snarl up. Grab onto Jared's ankles as he jumps off the highest building in Seaside, which is about six stories. Jared Glidus all the way out to Colorado. Right when he jumped the earthquake started happening, we see the tsunami start to blanket the city. Luckily, we're high up in the air, flying over the elementary school. When you get a brochure in Seaside, I might have mentioned this before, you get these brochures and it says, if you're here when the tsunami hits, a reasonable walk, like a reasonable walking speed will get you to the elementary school on time. If you're here when it happens, you're going to have to jog to get to the elementary school on time. And if you're here when it happens, it's full on sprint to get to the elementary school on time. And if you're here, if you're on the beach, I mean, unless you're Usain Bolt, you're not going to make it. And it's crazy, too, to think, like, you know, because I was talking to Sabine. I said it would be an issue where you would be, let's say you're in the jogging range, where a good jog will get you out of the danger zone. I said you're going to have to jog past mothers pushing strollers. You're going to be jogging past old women in wheelchairs. You're going to have to jog past people who you know cannot make it. Especially if you're in the sprint zone, right? You're like, Jason, you're casually jogging. I think you could pick up a baby, you lazy bum. I'm all just like speed walking. I see a baby. I was like, nope, can't help you. It's only 8 pounds. It's only an 8 pound baby. If you're in that sprint zone and they're like, you have to run as far as you can, as fast as you can. Otherwise, you will be killed by this massive tsunami coming. You're going to be running past people who you know are going to die. It's a creepy thought. See, we never visualize stuff like that. Jason, we don't, because it's depressing and you're a freak for doing it and then making me think about it. You would have to be running past people. And you'd see someone, like, trying to catch their breath, like an out-of-shape dad. He's like, hold on, kids, just go. And the family's, like, stopping to try to get their dad to start running again. And you're like, they're all dead. You're running past them. You see a bunch of kids in a ball pit, in a McDonald's ball pit. They're all trying to get out. They're all slipping on the balls. You're like, sorry, kids. You shouldn't have had fun. No fun at Seaside. That was your fault for jumping in the ball pit at the first point. You just run. Now, to be fair, I'm going to be very clear with you. If I'm in the running zone, I'm not going to make it. I'm like, whatever. I don't think I would sit down and face the tsunami. I would probably try to get to that six-story building and get to the top, but... You know, the building most likely would be wiped out by the tsunami. Like, it's not like you're like, oh, I'm on the roof. This is good. I'm safe. And then you notice the roof is like floating. The roof is floating across the landscape. You're like, okay, well, I gave it my best shot. But yeah, it's crazy to think it wouldn't just be you running and going, phew, I made it. It'd be you running past people that you know are going to die because they're not moving fast enough. Jared. Land us in Colorado. Now, I gotta say, too, because we were speaking at the Oregon Ghost Conference, and because we had our table, we got a lot of new listeners to the show. I'm going to let you guys know that this next story is quite disgusting. This next story is not for kids. If you are a new listener to Dead Rabbit Radio, maybe hit the fast forward button, or just pick another episode to listen to until you're over the age of 18. This segment is quite disgusting. We're in the city of Colorado, specifically Fort Collins, Colorado. It's July 2023. 911, what's your emergency? I don't know if this really classifies as an emergency, but I'm sitting in a Starbucks here enjoying a croissant and a frappuccino. I believe there's a man outside. He's exposing himself to us. Kind of ruining my breakfast, kind of killing my appetite here. There's a man walking around outside the Starbucks, and he is showing us his genitals. One operator's like, oh, I don't know if that's an emergency either, but that's creepy. We'll send the unit right out, sir, click. Police show up, the dude's gone. Week or two later, 911, what's your emergency? Hey, yeah, I'm standing here at the Starbucks. The 911 operator's like, okay, I know what's going to happen here. Let me guess. There's a guy exposing himself in front of the Starbucks. Because, you know, Starbucks has all those windows. Like, they don't have they have a wall of windows. So you can sit there and you can drink your coffee and kind of look at the world outside. Very open floor plan. But when there's a dude, when there's, that's exactly where you don't want to be eating. When there's a pervert who keeps showing up the outside of coffee shops. And he's not just exposing himself, which would be horrible enough. He's masturbating in full public view. And he specifically targeted coffee shops. He would do it in other locations. But if you were in front of like a Safeway, doesn't have a bunch of windows, people probably wouldn't even notice. Definitely when you're taking your groceries out to your car, you're like, oh man. He's standing right in front of your car. You're like, ah, I just got it washed. He liked doing this in front of coffee shops because it's shocking. Everyone can see you. And those things really play into these perverted minds. He's doing this over and over and over again. And the police always get there a little too late. So they're like, let's review the footage. Which would be the worst job. They get, like, the newest cop. They're like, hey, Barney, welcome to the force. You have to review all the pervert footage. He's like, oh, man. He's sitting there, and they can't see this guy's face. He's always wearing a disguise. It wasn't, like, a cool disguise. Like a scream mask or anything like that. He's like, ah! Just like a bandana. Or like a ski mask. So they don't know who this guy is. They can't figure it out. Well, eventually, that all started in July 2023. Jump ahead to February 2024. They do figure out who this guy is. So they're able to arrest the man. He's 32 years old. His name is Stephen Masalta. Stephen Masalta, 32 years old. Cops are finally able to identify him. They go to his house. They arrest him. And because of the crime, they say, well, let's take all of his electronic devices. Maybe they do this for all crimes nowadays. I don't know. I don't think if you're a thief, if you're breaking into people's garages and stealing all your power tools, I don't know if they take your computer. I don't know if they take all your devices when it's like different types of crimes. But anyways, they go in and with the search warrant, they get access to all his devices. And there's a lot of them. The police say, we have all of these phones with all of this video footage. We have this computer with all of these documents. Like, we took it all, and we're going to start processing it. But it's going to take a while for us to do this. They end up arresting him. He's charged with 14 counts of indecent exposure. And also exposing himself to minors. Because sometimes there were kids in these coffee shops. It's not like Starbucks is 18 and over. Sometimes people are there with their kids. So he got 14 counts of indecent exposure, which is shockingly just a misdemeanor. So, you know, at this point, he's looking at, you know, I don't know if they're just going to give him tickets. They're like, don't do that again, sir. It's $29 each time. He's like, what? It's that cheap? I'm going to do it. I'm totally doing it again. It doesn't sound like a lot. It doesn't sound like it's going to be that bad of a time, but the police start going through his video footage, going through like memory cards on phones and hard drive and stuff like that. Back at the station, and Barney, the guy who has to watch all the pervert stuff, goes to his boss, and he's like, boss, chief, you're not going to believe this. You know that whole pervert, that Starbucks pervert case we've been working on? And the chief's like, yeah, Barney, what's up? We got the guy. We arrested the guy. Are you just watching that footage? What are you watching that footage for? Are you a pervert too? He's like, no. We took all of his recording devices, and we had to go through his computer. I found out something way worse, that's going to have huge ramifications for the city of Fort Collins. Chief, you gotta come into the computer lab and take a look at this. Stephen Masalta worked at the Fort Collins Safeway. If you live in the area, I'm sorry for you. 1426 East Harmony Road. The Safeway on that street employed Stephen Masalta. And what happened was the police found videos of him, of Stephen, masturbating and ejaculating on food. Now, not his food. It's not like he's in the break room and he just made a TV dinner. No. On food. On food in the Safeway. Food people are going to buy. Food that people are going to consume. And you go, okay. That's incredibly disturbing. That might be the worst thing you've heard all day. Considering a bridge collapsed last night. Considering an unknown amount of people fell off a bridge. This might be the worst thing you've heard today. Because he was masturbating on food. He was videotaping himself masturbating and ejaculating on food. And the police... Because your first question is, okay. He's walking through the frozen foods aisle. And he sees some DiGiorno pizzas. And there's a videotape of him masturbating on a DiGiorno's box. Which I'm not trying to downplay it. But that's one thing. That's not what he was doing. The police made it very clear he was ejaculating on food that wasn't wrapped up or protected in any sort of way. So, probably the produce aisle, probably all over the apples and the celery and the things that, while you could say you would want to, I'm not, I wouldn't be like, oh, it was just on. It's just on the box, guys. This is okay. Who wants the DiGiorno for tonight? I'm not saying that the first one is good, but it's worse when it is an unwrapped, unsealed food. So all of the stuff in the produce department, I would imagine, was tainted by this guy. Maybe not all of it, right? Maybe he forgot. He's like, pineapples, ouch, no, I'm not gonna do that. What, do you think I am some sort of weirdo? And the police said, we've just started watching the videos. There are so many videos of this guy masturbating on food at the Safeway. We have just begun to collect evidence on this. We can't even estimate how long he'd been doing this for. And how much food he actually contaminated. We're just getting started. I'm trying to think, like, what other food is unsealed at a grocery store? It is mostly the produce. And then, like, they have those huge, like, you go into the, like, the mixed nuts aisle, right? You could probably, like, do it there. Although that would probably be a little more. He's all walking on top of the cabinets. What are those things called? Those aisles. They're like, what are you doing up there, Stephen? It was probably mostly the produce section. You're spitting, spitting out apples. You're throwing up. You're like, ah, I just went to that Safeway. They had a discount on old apples. Apples from February. I bought 2 dozen for a penny. Yeah, so he's facing more charges. That's actually like a sexual assault charge. But they're still reviewing video. They still don't know how much he did this for. He, you know, I believe he only worked there for a couple months. He worked at Safeway for like 4 to 6 months, but that's enough to do a lot of damage. I also thought it was interesting. I found his LinkedIn. I didn't see any other website that talked about this, any other news site. I found his LinkedIn profile. He used to, oddly enough, I don't think this was a joke, although he might have put this in to be funny. Before Safeway, he worked as a pipeline cleaning operator. It can kind of be a pun, right? That might have been what he was calling his job at Safeway. Before that, he was in Sacramento, where I used to live. His story got a lot less funny when I go, uh-oh, I might have crossed paths with this guy. But no, luckily I didn't. He worked at a Starbucks in Sacramento, but he was working there after I had left. But I imagine, I don't think he was a totally normal dude, and then he got a job at Safeway and saw a luscious bundle of grapes and all of a sudden became a pervert. He was probably a pervert for a while. I'm not a psychologist, but I'm pretty sure that's how it works. I don't think one day you wake up and you're a pervert. He worked at a Starbucks in Sacramento, and of course, this is always the most disturbing part. I mean, all that stuff was pretty disturbing. But the last thing, or the earliest job he had listed on his LinkedIn, in Woodland, California, he was a worship director at the New Life Community Church. So I really hope the authorities are there seeing if he, you know, if there's any victims there. And if there are, punishing him to the furthest extent of the law. Hopefully not. Hopefully he didn't do anything to anybody while he was there, or really anything to anybody ever. I'm just saying that it could be worse. I don't eat produce, so I'm not worried about it at all. I never eat produce, but creepy. We've covered stuff like this before. People who were sexually abusing food at supermarkets and other items and contaminating them. It's horrific. It's a weird thing. Like, what's going on in this guy's head? Why did he think this was right? Why did he do it? You also, I mean, like, how did no one ever catch him, too? Like, I guess no one's really in the produce section that much. If, like, it's a slow day, and, like, everyone's, like, down, like, I don't know, buying soda and crackers and cookies and stuff like that, and you look around, and there's no one else in the produce department. Maybe that's how he got away with it. I don't know. It also is weird that not only did he do it, but he videotapes himself doing it. So that must have been some sort of thrill as well. That must have been some part of the thrill as well, was videotaping it and reliving it. And then you have to wonder how many times he did it and didn't videotape it. And you know what's crazy about this story too, is that this can't be the only guy. Like I said, we've covered stuff like this before. I'm sure there are other people right now while you're listening to this podcast as you're walking through a grocery store. You're all paranoid. You're like, ah! You see people walking around in aprons. You're like, what's going on underneath that apron? Lift it up! Lift it up! You get arrested for assaulting yourself. You imagine there's at least, like, maybe 10 other people right now somewhere in America doing the same thing. There's, like, what, 370 million Americans. I think that's pretty safe guess. Right now, there are 10 people in this country doing the exact same thing Steven did. I wonder if he was uploading these videos to a site. I wonder if this actually is a bigger fetish than anyone. That would be interesting if the cops found out that there is a website that caters to this. And imagine if they found, like, hundreds of thousands of videos on this YouTube-esque website where people are uploading all of this disgusting stuff. What would you do at that point? Like, I imagine Safeway hates this story. I imagine that Safeway, they're just going to have to cordon off the entire produce department. No one's going to want to shop there for a while. What if you knew, remember that chaos that started when someone had videotaped themselves licking ice cream? And was like, ice cream is not safe. We need to change things. Look at these people licking ice cream. Blah, blah, blah. This, I would argue, most of you would agree, is 10 times worse than licking ice cream. Imagine if there are more people doing this. This is the newest TikTok thing. But we want to know about it. It's like a pervert TikTok that it's out there somewhere and people are currently infesting your food. Creepy, creepy stuff. Let's go ahead, Jared. I'm going to toss you the keys to the world famous carpenter copter. We are leaving behind Fort Collins, Colorado. We're waving goodbye to all of the employees at Safeway, all the perverts. They're like, one may fall, but 10 will take our place. We see 10 more people getting jobs at the Safeway. We're like, no, the infection spreads. We're leaving behind Fort Collins, Colorado. Fly us all the way out to a backyard barbecue. The year is 2009, and it's a summer day. At a nice house sitting in a neighborhood, we hear a party going on outside. Summer, summer, summertime. See some guy walking with a big plate of meat. So I just bought it from Safeway. It was a discount because it wasn't wrapped up. Just had this meat sitting behind the counter, man. Summer, summer, summertime. Meat sizzling on the grill. People are just kind of sitting there, hanging out, talking, laughing. A couple of beers getting kicked back. A couple sodas cracking open. Nice ice cold Coca-Cola on a hot summer day. We're about to meet a young boy. Let's call him Barry. He's about 5-6 years old, so he's a little guy. And this party is happening at his house. Mostly family. He goes, I think there were a couple of neighborhood people there, a couple of friends of the family. He goes, I'm sitting there and I'm sitting in between my uncle and my dad. I'm playing with my toys on the table as everyone's just kind of laughing and talking, having a good time. Eating a delicious burger with some crinkle cut fries. And Barry's sitting there playing with his toys. I'm going to get you, evil tank. You'll never stop me, good guy Jet. When all of a sudden, as his toys are at the height of their conflict, he makes a loud explosion noise with his mouth. And that's when Barry realized that after he had made that explosion noise, the backyard was completely silent, save for the sound of meat sizzling on the grill. The adults had stopped talking. The drinks stopped clanking. Everyone was frozen in place. No one was making a sound. Barry is obviously a little disturbed by this. It's not normal for a party to go completely silent. He looks up from his toys, and that's when he realizes that everyone in the backyard is looking up at the second story of his house. And they were specifically all looking up towards his parents' bedroom window. And Barry looks up as well. He looks up to see into his parents' bedroom window and his jaw immediately drops. There's a man standing in their bedroom. But a better word would be a thing, a humanoid in the shape of a man. He said the whole thing, the whole entity, was ultramarine blue in color. Now, the entity does have, like, a face, does have eyes and a mouth and all of that as well, but it just has this weird blurring effect on it. They can tell that it is human or humanoid. Barry and the other people at the party could only see this thing from the waist up. But it had, you know, a waist, torso, arms, hands, head. It was still humanoid in shape. It looked like a glowing blue man, an ultramarine blue man that had this blur-like field effect on top of it. Barry said this blurring that was surrounding this entity was making it very, very difficult to stare at. You actually wanted to look away. It hurt your eyes to see this blur. But at the same time, you couldn't look away. Because it was such a bizarre sight. It was physically taxing on the eyes to stare at, but you didn't want to take your eyes off of it. Barry compared this to, he goes, the best thing I can compare this to as far as the color goes and to kind of how it looked almost like an energy being, a humanoid made of energy. He compared it to the Phantom Virus from the Scooby-Doo movie, Scooby-Doo Cyber Chase. Some of you might have been familiar with that. Some of you guys probably, when I first started doing this, you're like, no, the Phantom Virus, he's real. That was the scariest movie of Scooby-Doo. I've never seen it. I looked it up. I'll put some links in the show notes if you guys want to see what it looks like. It looks just like an entity made out of energy. ultramarine blue. And if it was just Barry seeing this, then you're like, oh, he's just scared of Scooby-Doo. But remember, it's all of these adults. This is the middle of the day. Everyone has stopped doing what they're doing because this figure has caught their attention. They're all looking up at this thing. And this humanoid, this blue humanoid, is looking down at them. And he throws open the bedroom window. And he leans almost all the way out and angrily stares down at the barbecue party. And he's making eye contact with each group. All these adults that are sitting at these tables, they're eating, they're all staring up, and he looks angrily at each group of people. And he's just pissed. Barry says this entity just looked furious, had this furious look on his face as he's staring down at us. This ultramarine, blue, blurry, glowing entity is staring down at them with this pissed off look, and he shouts out, "Can you all shut up? I'm trying to sleep up here." It then grabs the bedroom window, slams it shut, and walks out of view. Barry's sitting there, and he's like, what in the world is going on? And he knows the chaos that's about to erupt. He knows that all of these adults are about to jump up and run into the house and find out what's going on. Someone is in their house. Someone is screaming at them. Someone's glowing blue in their house, and he realizes that all of his family members, everyone here is going to run into the house and freak out and try to figure out what's going on. But nobody moves. There's just the silence that hangs over the backyard. A few seconds pass, and then a few more pass. And then the sound of the party returned. Glasses clinking against ice. People laughing. Finishing conversations that they had started before this blue figure appeared in the window. It was like time had been snipped out for a moment. But now was being stitched back together. It was as if that had never happened in the first place. Everything went back to normal to the point that people were finishing thoughts and sentences that they'd begun before this experience. He said it was as if someone snapped their fingers and a trance ended. Which deeply disturbed Barry. He goes, even as a young kid, I realized that something wrong had happened. Whatever this experience was, whatever was up in that bedroom wasn't supposed to exist. And he goes, I don't truly remember what I did. He goes, you know, it's 15 years ago is when this happened. He said, either I sat there and tried to convince myself that the event never happened in the first place. He goes, I either did that, or I also have a memory of running into the house and running up to my parents' bedroom to see if that creature was still there, to see what exactly was going on. He goes, I remember doing that, but I don't really remember doing that. I remember just kind of sitting there and trying to convince myself that it was all imagination or that I misread something or something. He goes, I don't remember which one really happened. He goes, I do not believe this was a dream, though. He says, I absolutely don't think it's a dream. He goes, I have vivid memories of this 15 years later. He goes, I never really brought it up to my parents. I have no idea what that was. Well, what's interesting is after he posted this online, he posted this online underneath the name Low Satisfaction 136. He goes, I did ask my mom after he posted this online because people were like, what? What is going on? He goes, I asked my mom about it. And he goes, you know, my parents are older at this point. They don't have the best memories. But he's talking to his mom. He goes, hey, remember when we had that barbecue a long time ago, 15 years ago? She's like, dude, we've had a lot of barbecues, Barry. Yeah, but we had a barbecue 15 years ago. And do you remember anything about that? What's interesting is Barry said his mom did remember something weird happening at a barbecue. She goes, I guess like something odd happened once, but she couldn't quite recall exactly what made it weird or what was going on. At that point, Barry tells his story. He goes, well, the one I'm specifically talking about is we were at this barbecue and then this blue man was up in your guys' bedroom and he leaned out the window and said that we all needed to be quiet. He was trying to sleep and he laid out the whole story, and even after hearing those details, the mom said, yeah, that kind of sounds familiar, I guess. I think, if anything, it might have been someone from the party had went up there and was trying to sleep. But I don't remember a blue guy. I don't remember a blue guy made of blurry energy. She had a vague recollection after being coached on all the details. Even then, she had a vague recollection of somebody maybe doing something like that. But she goes, it must have been someone from the party. It was not a paranormal event. And yet, she still says she does remember something weird happening at a barbecue 15 years ago. This is one of those stories I love for two reasons. And we'll wrap it up like this. One, it's pretty much unclassifiable. It truly is high strangeness. It's not a ghost, or at least we don't think it is, right? Based on what we know of ghosts, of this phenomenon, I don't believe it's a ghost. I don't believe it's a cryptid. I don't believe it's an alien. Could be interdimensional. Could be boogeyman adjacent, right? Because it's in a room. But it's interesting because whatever it was, he wanted to sleep. We don't see a lot of paranormal phenomenon trying to get a afternoon nap. It's being disturbed by these people. As far as what the phenomenon itself is, we don't know. We don't know what this could be. There's nothing else really like this. We've covered electrical people on this show before. Did I ever do that? I think I did that story about the guy who was like electricity running around the backyard. But that was like a lightning bolt guy. Maybe he was in a rush to get home to go to sleep. Wouldn't that be crazy if one day we covered two of these stories and we don't know where they take place, and it turns out they take place on the same block? We would never know, right? These anonymous stories, but I think it's fascinating because we don't know what it is. The other thing that I find fascinating about this, and it's something I hammer home to paranormal researchers and people who don't believe in the phenomenon. If people don't believe in the phenomenon, you're never really able to convince them otherwise. And that's fine. You know, I don't spend my days trying to prove any of this stuff is real, because it's a fool's errand. It really is. It's like someone trying to prove that the earth is round to someone who doesn't believe in it. It's the same thing when you're trying to prove that the world of the paranormal is real, that ghosts are real. It's like talking to a flat earther. Any amount of evidence you give them, they will have an answer for. So I know some people just enjoy hearing those stories, and that's fine. Some people are antagonistic towards the world of the paranormal, and they're like, prove it, prove it, prove it. Well, that's not what I'm here for. I don't need to prove anything any more than NASA needs to prove that the Earth is round. But it is interesting when you look at the idea that this phenomenon is so chaotic that it does not matter how many witnesses you have of an event. They may instantly forget it. They may not perceive it in the first place. You're looking at something that isn't real. And when I say isn't real, I mean like the phenomenon is real, but you're sitting in your backyard, you look up and you see a glowing blue guy lean out of your bedroom window and yell at you. Your initial reaction is, oh, I would totally run in the house and find out who that is. But that's if you remembered it more than half a second after the phenomenon happened. I've been on ghost hunts where we have encountered shadow people. I have been with people who have been on those ghost hunts with me. And I'm like, dude, I can't believe that happened. Did you see that? And they're like, dude, that was totally nuts. A year later, it was my friend Josh who did this. Nick did this as well. we had an experience with the shadow person, and I'll tell you the story. I don't know if I'm sure I told the story before on the podcast. There was a guy that we were on this big ghost hunt. There was a guy I used to kick it with named Chris who didn't believe in any of this stuff. And we were out of this location, and I saw a shadow man standing behind him and, like, towering over him. And I was like, dude, don't move. I did not tell him anything. I didn't say there's a shadow man behind you or he has his hands on your shoulders, anything like that. I just walked up behind him, and I was like, dude, don't move. Just stay there. And his girl was there and all that stuff. There's a bunch of us. And I walked up behind him, and I did not touch Chris. I put my hand where the shadow man's, like, abdomen would be, because it's much taller than Chris was. Chris is looking away from me. I walk up behind him. I put my hand where the shadow man's abdomen is, and I kind of reach in. And at this point, I'm still maybe, like, a foot or two from Chris. And when I put my hand into the shadow man's abdomen, Chris felt his knees buckle. I did not say, okay, I'm touching the shadow man now. He's right behind you. His hands are on your shoulders. Nothing. I just walked up behind him and I put my hand. If I told this story before? I think I had. I put my hand to where the shadow. Now, Josh is watching me do this. He's kind of at another angle. I don't remember if Nick was here for this particular one. I know Nick has done this same thing, though. So will you just use Josh as the catch-all? Josh, if he listens to this episode, he's going to be like, that never happened. But anyways, I put my hand there. I know Josh was there for a fact. I put my hand there and Chris's knees buckled like I had disrupted some sort of energy. And I go, dude, what happened? He's like, I don't feel good. He's like, what the hell's going on back there? I was like, dude, I don't even know at that point I told him that there was a shadow man previously standing behind him. But he felt his knees buckle and we were all on this ghost hunt together and he had taken his own car. And he's like, I'm leaving. I'm out of here. Like, this is, I don't want to be here anymore. And him and his girl hopped in the car and they left probably about 5 minutes after all of this went down. I was like, dude, are you okay? Are you okay to drive? You might have just gotten assaulted by a shadow person. He drove away. Now, Josh had seen the whole thing and I was like, dude, yeah, there was a shadow person behind him. Josh saw me put my hand and I'm holding my hand a good foot or two away from Chris's back. There's no way he could see what I was doing or why I was doing it. But when I put my hand into basically what anyone else would see as a blank space, Chris's knees buckled and he's like, I'm out of here. And he left. I was like, Josh, dude, that was nuts. So I saw a shadow man behind him and you saw that I put my hand there and then Chris's knees buckled. And Josh was like, dude, that was nuts. I go, he didn't even know what I was doing. He wouldn't even know where the shadow man was or whatever. Like, why did he have a physical reaction to something he didn't even know what was going on? Now, if I had touched him, if I'd actually touched his back and his knees buckled, then you could say, well, you know, he figured you were doing something and maybe he didn't want to be touched by you. Maybe he thought you were lame. No, Josh, wasn't that nuts, dude? The shadow man, Josh, like, yeah, it's pretty nuts. It's pretty nuts. I watched you do that. I watched you walk up behind this dude and hold your hand out. And I didn't know what you were doing. I didn't see a shadow person. Then I saw his knees buckle. And I go, yeah, it was like because the shadow person had his hands on Chris's shoulders and want to put my hand in. Well, fast forward, I don't know. It was a year, maybe 8 months, a year later. And I was hanging out with Josh. And for whatever reason, I say for whatever reason, all we ever do is talk about ghosts. But anyways, I remember bringing up this story. I go, dude, you remember that time when we were out of that field and I'm like, touched that shadow man and then Chris's knees buckled and Josh is like, that never happened. I go, what? I go, you remember that? You totally remember that? And he's like, no, it didn't. I go, Josh, even if you, I know you didn't see the shadow man, but do you remember when we went out ghost hunting? He's like, yeah, we used to go ghost hunting all the time. Do you remember when Chris came? Yeah, Chris did come. Do you remember that his knees buckled and he left early? And Josh is like, I don't remember any of that. I had other experiences with my friend Nick like that as well, where we would experience something together, and then a couple of months later, he's like, what? What are you talking about? I didn't understand it at the time. It was actually making me really mad. I was like, Josh, come on. How do you remember everything leading up to that? But spending years researching since, that is unfortunately normal. That when we are confronted by the paranormal, that our brains do have a little switch that goes, that's not real. Click. And it's a safety mechanism. It's to keep us from constantly going insane. A kid doesn't understand how the world works. A 5-6-year-old, as far as they know, Scooby-Doo villains might be real. There might really be a boogeyman out there. They don't understand the rules of the world. That's why they have imaginary friends. Adults know that that stuff's not possible, but to a kid, it is all possible. A kid looks at this thing and goes, well, maybe there's just blue people sometimes. He said it felt weird, it felt odd, but as far as he knows, this happens every so often. A blue guy jumps out of your bedroom. But to the adults there, they know that's impossible. They might have a feeling, a hint that something weird happened at a barbecue years ago. But their brains immediately just shut down and said, that didn't happen, and they literally just continued on with their day. Because the inverse of that is just chaos. All the men of the party rush inside to go confront this blue meanie, this blue entity in the bedroom, and they get in there and there's nothing there. And now they have to sit down and have a discussion about reality. And what was that thing? And where did it come from? And is it going to come back? And are we safe from this thing? And of course, all those answers are going to be negative, right? No, we're not safe from this thing. It just appeared in our bedroom at a random point. Who's to say it's not going to strangle us in our sleep tonight? It's easier to just forget the whole thing ever happened. Like, your brain will default to the easiest setting. Up and down, left and right, time, space, gravity, things like that. Those are easy for us to comprehend. The human brain does not want to deal with this type of stuff. The human brain does not like chaos. That's why we see symbols and images and everything. Look up at the clouds, you'll see an elephant eventually. Paranormal is the opposite. It is the lack of sense in things. True chaos. The boogeyman may be under your bed. That's chaos. You will never safe. You are never safe. There could be a monster in your closet. There could be a maniac with a sharp knife in your basement. Chaos. So our brain goes, no, that stuff's not real. That stuff's not. The maniac in the basement, that one's at least plausible. But you know what I mean. Very interesting story. Multiple witnesses see this entity. The entity is itself an anomaly. I would argue if they looked up and they saw a woman wearing a pioneer clothing with a little bonnet staring out of that window looking down at the party and she vanished, they would probably have a higher likelihood of remembering that because we understand what a ghost is. Some of them, though, would look up and they might think about it that day and then eventually they won't remember it at all because the brain just doesn't want to process it. But that is at least a story that you can comprehend. You could go, my house is haunted. My bedroom's haunted. And you understand the rules of a ghost. An electrical blue monster leaning out of your window telling you to keep it down because he's trying to sleep. It's so absurd, your brain just goes, no. The only person who really remembers that event is a kid, and kids believe anything is possible. Once you've gotten to a certain age, you start to believe you know what is possible, what is real, and what is unreal. But the problem with that is that you only know that because of what your brain allows you to remember. It doesn't factor in the times you're walking down your hallway to go to the bathroom late one night and you saw a kid drenched in blood standing in the darkness. Your brain literally said, nope. And you walked into the bathroom and you did your business and then you went back to bed. But that kid was standing there. He was covered in blood and he was staring at you as you were walking down that hallway. You just don't remember it because that is safe. That keeps you calm. That keeps reality sane. But just because you can't see it, just because you don't remember it, doesn't mean it wasn't there in the first place. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at Facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. TikTok is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal conspiracy and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm so glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys. It's good to be back.
Have you heard about the 2018 study that showed half of prenatal vitamins tested had unacceptable levels of heavy metals? No? Well, now you have. I'm Kat, mother of three and founder of Ritual, the company making traceability the new standard in the supplement industry. I remember staring at my prenatal vitamins and finding all these things I was trying to avoid: high amounts of heavy metals, synthetic colorants, and unnecessary ingredients. So, at 4 months pregnant, I quit my job and started Ritual because I believe that all women deserve to know what they're putting in their bodies and why. I'm so proud of our prenatal vitamin. The ingredients are 100% traceable. It's third-party tested for microbes and heavy metals and recently received the Purity Award from the Clean Label Project. You see, we trace like a mother because, let's be honest, no one cares quite like a mother. But don't just take my word for it. Trace for yourself with 25% off at ritual.com/podcast.